We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Sam, listeners, Light Years Podcast, do you ever feel like you're always on? What do you do when you need a moment to chill? How do you like to hit the reset button to get ready for what's next? There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Wow, that's amazing. That way you always know when it's time to chill. When you need to hit reset, just open up a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment and made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
Light Years Podcast, Samus Fandiari here. This is the last week without Andy Liu, the last week where it's just adults before we get back to getting out of control. So I had to bring in kind of a bridge guest, someone who I didn't think would take it all the way to full Andy, but would kind of get us out of the boring dunked on knockoff style podcast. So I got Justin Rowan from the Chase Down, and I feel like every Warrior fan's favorite Cav fan. You're like the John McCain of Warrior fans here.
I appreciate that. I probably won't be able to go full Andy. Even though it is a weeknight, I'm sober, which isn't in the spirit of what he brings to the table. But I'm happy to be here. I really do appreciate it.
I do feel like with LeBron officially missing the playoffs, with one, you cover the Cavs, and then two, obviously Warrior fans have a special relationship with all things LeBron. This is the perfect episode for you to come on to.
yeah. There's it's funny. It's almost like people focus on LeBron, and there's a conversation surrounding him, even if he doesn't play for your favorite team.
Yeah, I mean, he's mastered the media thing. That's for sure. I did appreciate the minute that they got eliminated. His trainer posts like the long-winded Instagram, like explaining how he should have been out 6 months. Just master of narratives.
I did see that, and it's no secret that he does like to control the narrative. I think it's pretty clear that he hasn't been at 100%, whether that's just a conditioning thing or if it's some sort of lingering issue. But it is funny to see how that post comes out. I mean, there's no way he was going to go out quietly, and that Instagram post was actually, it came a little bit later than I expected.
Yeah, I think I thought it was curated to release the minute they got eliminated, like it was sitting in the drafts, and it's like, okay, it's official now. Release.
it's right up there. So that one was a scheduled one, and there's one tomorrow when he puts up 28 points in a loss. There's going to be a post about Chris Bosh getting his number retired that'll come up right after the game, and just talk about the glory days there. It's funny. It's almost like. I get what he's doing this year with the Instagram posts and the kind of tone-deaf messages he's firing out. He's just kind of focusing on the positives. But it's just, I can see from a Lakers fan perspective of just how frustrating that would be. I think I was joking about this because I went on the Heat Beat podcast earlier, but we were wondering if he just struggles with normal human emotions and you almost got like a sociopath thing going on, going full Dennis Reynolds of, oh man, I think this is what people want to hear at this point.
I actually don't think he posts any of them. I'm pretty convinced he's just fully in the Hollywood thing. Like, he's not even aware of what's going on. He had that quote when they played the Knicks where it was like telling Kevin Knox, just like, don't even look at social media. And I kind of believe to a degree he tries not to look at that stuff. Cause like, can you imagine being in his shoes, just how miserable that would be? I mean,
or
just like what KD does, which we'll get to that later, but like, obviously it's not great for your mental health. But like, so I kind of have this theory that it's, someone in his management team just doing it, and he's like quasi unaware of all of it. Like, it's full Weekend at Bernie's.
Yeah, I thought about that. I'm not sure where I stand on that. I could see a reality where he's just kind of posting stuff and throwing that out into the void, and then just never checks the mentions. But also just the wording and everything. It's that peak corny dad that LeBron is really known for. And yeah, for that reason, I can see if it's not being posted by him, it's something that he at least had kind of dictated earlier on. And it's just a social media manager publishing it. But it's definitely in his voice. So that makes me think that he had some part of it.
So I know you're not bitter about LeBron leaving. You've been pretty like pretty clear with all that. Is mm-hmm. there like a sense of kind of this is the best case scenario of how him exiting would feel for you guys?
To a certain extent. So the best case scenario is that the Cavs are going to end up with the best possible lottery odds this year. You got kind of a healthy locker room, surprisingly. Kevin Love still kind of bought in, and I know that the team's never going to contend again, but they seem to be in position to
Zion or something.
Even then I don't think that that's going to put them over the top or even close to that. But in terms of how this season has gone, personally, I would like to see him in a better situation. Like, I would have preferred to see some help around him. But given the conversation this summer, and just how stubborn the Lakers had been.
They're total dicks. Don't be nice about it.
Right.
It was some of the most, like, it was just so arrogant and undeserved, like, of all people to say it. Like, people roll their eyes and the Warriors are arrogant, but at least the basketball has backed it up over the last few years. It's like,
right,
who are these guys?
And it's also kind of funny that after 8 straight of finals appearances, this is the season where the Eastern Conference beat LeBron James. the Lakers versus the East with LeBron. I think they're at 8-14 now, and they're 10-18 overall. Versus the Western Conference, they're 22-23, 18-14 with LeBron. So it's actually the games against the Eastern Conference that doomed them and kept them out of the race. So that's pretty funny to look at. Obviously, I don't think you can read a whole lot into it. Everyone with eyes can see that the West is better this season. But it is just kind of a funny wrinkle in all of this. But yeah, I think the Lakers' victory lap and just how much they dismissed, both with the fan base and the comments from Magic Johnson on how teams haven't built well around LeBron in the past.
And my whole thing was like, I've seen people apologize. Like, the one apologist line has been like, well, Pelinka's a first-time GM. Magic's a first-time whatever the hell his position is.
Right.
But, like, so they should have put, like, experienced guys around them. But I'm sitting here going, like, I don't feel like you needed that much experience to know Rondo and Lance were like, just terrible ideas setting up for, like, the most combustible situation ever.
Right, and the baffling thing to me, and this is something I've tweeted out before, but as Magic Johnson, when you're thinking, okay, LeBron is probably the closest thing we've seen to Magic in terms of size, passing ability, and the way he kind of runs a team. Yes, he scores more, but he's the closest we've seen to it. The fact that Magic would look at LeBron and be like, okay, what we need to do is take the ball out of his hands. We're going to get ball handlers that can't really shoot, and we're just going to get more and more secondary playmaking. As much as I would have, I disagreed with not trading the young guys and kind of trying to see what you got there. If you actually believed in the young players, what you would do is you'd surround LeBron and the young core with guys that fit, that highlight their strengths and put them in the best possible light, either to develop them internally or to showcase them as trade pieces.
They just got
poor man's versions of each of them.
Yeah, it's pretty clear that they were just planning to trade them the whole time. Like that AD thing was, this is where like that felt like pre-planned for 6 months. Is all I'm going to say. Like, you can't tell me like, oh, that was Rich Paul. LeBron had nothing to do with that. More so, the Lakers had nothing to do with that. You know, that sort of thing. Like, that was all that felt very premeditated. And like, they literally built a roster for the idea that they would strip the roster.
Right, exactly. But my point is still, even if that's your intention, I think you could have gone about it better in highlighting those guys as trade assets. And you know what? I agree. I think that the intention all along was to make a trade. I think that was what LeBron had in mind as well. But they probably had other trade talks earlier in the season, especially with all the guys we saw that moved. And when they got pushed back or there was no interest in the young guys, they figured, okay, we have to pull out all the stops. We have to do all the back channel stuff. We have to leak everything. We have to put everything in this AD basket, and the Pelicans are going to fold like other teams have folded as they trade guys to the Lakers. And then that just didn't occur. I don't think the trade rumors are what caused everything to fall apart.
Oh, I disagree. Hear me on this one here.
Okay.
So they were with LeBron pre-injury, they were an average offense, and when he went off the floor, they were the worst offense in the NBA.
Right.
But defensively, they were top 10. Without LeBron, they were obviously terrible on offense, but they were still top. The defense was the same. It wasn't any worse. The minute those trade rumors started, they fell to like the third or the second worst defense in the NBA. And defense is definitely, that's about like playing for each other. They turned into a team of guys who are all just playing for their stats. It's not that Ingram and Kuzma weren't good after the trade. It's just that like, you know, when you're playing with someone you don't care about, when you have zero interest to make a rotation. And that's kind of how they played post-trade deadline, in my opinion. So
no, I certainly get that. I think there's an element to that. But at the same time, we have to remember that there was going to be some regression just to begin with, because they don't have that many players that are capable.
But the offense didn't get worse, is my thing. Like, post-deadline, the offense was exactly as good as it was pre, which kind of just speaks to like LeBron can literally generate offense while not being able to move because he's that
right. Right. I understand that. But my point is that the defense was probably better than it actually was. And I don't think that was just an effort thing. And then that was lacking after. I mean, Tyson Chandler played a big role in that, and he was a corpse. Like, they had good 2-3 weeks with him. The other factor is that the schedule is backloaded. It was always going to get worse. And if you look at that time of year, that early December time, like, even Denver had a great defense at that point. Like, it's still a lot of that early season noise. And obviously Lonzo Ball getting hurt, that hurt the defense. But they just don't have good defensive players on that roster. And I think... So there's obviously the injuries, there's the trade rumors and that affecting chemistry, but there was going to be a natural regression. And the fact that their only deadline move, it's okay that you struck out on Anthony Davis. Obviously, you would have liked to have him. But the fact that they didn't really go out and help the team, they just traded. Yeah, the Muscala trade makes no sense whatsoever. And I think if even if you did kind of what the Cavs did last year, where you add a bunch of role players that teams aren't necessarily interested in, expiring guys or guys that you're able to make a decision on, but that fit a little bit better with the team, I think that would have gone a long way towards kind of salvaging this season.
Yeah, I mean, when I look at it, end of the day, LeBron got hurt at the most gimme part of the schedule. If you remember, they lost to the Knicks, the Bulls, like the games that if they had Cavs. LeBron, it would have, yeah, except the Cavs, it would have, those were like, that was like the span they needed to go like 9-1 or like 8-2, because they were inevitably going to lose a bunch of games to Utah and, you know, whoever it may be.
Yeah, the schedule was backloaded to accommodate TV scheduling. That's the way that it always is with LeBron teams. And you know what? It just, the injuries and the timing was the worst possible scenario for them.
Yeah. Well, we've done our sufficient victory lap. I have no sympathy for them whatsoever.
I don't either. It's it's fine. I mean, even their best case scenario, they weren't going to be a contender. Even if they traded for Anthony Davis, they would probably still be a second round out in the West, because it takes more than two guys.
I think they would have been sneaky if he never got hurt, because it's still LeBron, and it would have, like, as long as the young guys are bought in, they could have got some momentum out of that. I'm still not convinced outside of Houston, the rest of the West is like that discern. They're good. They're really good, but they're not like, I'm not taking Utah over a healthy LeBron team, I guess. Like if you're going to give me some, even without shooting, it would have been difficult. But anyway, we're beyond that. We've got our jokes in. I actually wanted to transition this. I think you have a unique take on this, because the big theme for the year for Warrior fans has been just kind of super team fatigue. Right. And it's one of those things that, like, you can't really give it credence until you live it every day. Mm-hmm. You can conceptualize it. People can tell you about it, and you can be like, that makes sense. But if it's not the team you're watching, you know, four nights a week and consuming on a daily basis, you don't truly get like how it just kind of like every year is more of a grind, and every year it's less and less enjoyable during the regular season.
Yeah.
So I kind of wanted your, you know, because you pay attention to them the way you pay attention to the rest of the league. But you're not like in the weeds the way we all are on it. So like just kind of like your perspective on what you're seeing.
I mean, all things considered, it's remarkable that there hasn't been more drama along the way. Because just accumulating talent in the NBA is one thing, but just the way that these guys have fit together is pretty remarkable. I guess this season is more of what you would kind of expect, because you got the guys that were there since the beginning, and there's going to be tensions there. You're going to have times when Draymond's frustrated with Steve Kerr. You're going to have times where there's disagreements between those three guys. And then you have the added pressure of a star player that has the potential to leave, and that is just going to pour gasoline on the entire situation. So all things considered, with how little they actually have to play for in the regular season, I think it's pretty remarkable that there hasn't been more issues or more public issues. But I think this is all pretty standard. Like, I look at the drama that they've had, and it all just seems like things that will go away when the pressure of the playoffs comes. I don't think that it's going to be something that causes them to crack. I think it's something that makes them just go, okay, none of this is important enough to sabotage what's going on, and just everything simplifies when it comes to playoff basketball.
Yeah, we'll say it gave me a little more appreciation for LeBron, in the sense of, like, it's pretty obnoxious watching him in the regular season, like the last 4 years, when you know he's objectively better than that. And then you watch like players that you aren't used to doing that start doing the same thing when it's like fourth, fifth year of a run, and it really starts hitting you. It's like, dude, you're just asking. It's like an unrealistic ask.
Yeah, and the big thing, and I know we've had disagreements on this in the past, the thing with LeBron, especially with how he coasts in the regular season, the playoff LeBron and that second tier, it would not exist if he didn't coast,
right?
Especially after the 14, 15 years in the league. It just wasn't possible. There has been regression to his game. He's just very good at hiding it. And a little less this year because it's just right. that obvious that defense isn't something he can turn on even at the best of times. But you're right. Like there's just times where this Warriors team is coasting.
Well, it's like players are faced with two decisions or three decisions, really. They can go the Tim Duncan route, which is like gracefully kind of shrink their role and do like, because Duncan was, he just became more about like defense and team play instead of like getting his 25 and 15 as he got older. Mm-hmm. Or you can go the Kobe route, which is literally just die on the court.
Right.
Or you could do the LeBron thing where you're trying to kind of meld the two. And right. it's annoying to those who've seen you at your peak because they know, you know, like you didn't used to, you know, not get back in transition like that. But
yeah, a decade ago, you were possibly the best defensive player in the league.
You're chasing down every play. But yeah,
it's almost his approach to his overall game is very similar to the Cavs approach to like playoff basketball, where it was like, OK, we're going to make strategic sacrifices where we're going to cover four guys really well, but we're going to leave Lance Stephenson wide the hell open. And
the Harrison Barnes defense, that worked out for you guys.
Right, exactly. It's a little more difficult when KD's in the Barnes role, but it works against a lot of other teams.
Life can be stressful, but getting life insurance shouldn't be. That's why there's Ethos. Ethos is a modern kind of life insurance that's super fast, incredibly affordable, and very uncomplicated. At GetEthos.com, there's no medical exams for policies covering under $1 million. No hours of paperwork or meetings with pushy representatives. It only takes 10 minutes to apply, and you can rest assured you're taking steps to protect your family, and in most cases with Ethos, you can get peace of mind for less than a cup of coffee a day with no hidden fees. Having life insurance can free you from stress. Getting life insurance shouldn't cause it. Discover how uncomplicated life insurance can be at Ethos. Get your free instant quote and submit your complete application within minutes. Just go to GetEthos.com. That's E-T-H-O-S. GetEthos.com. GetEthos.com.
Yeah, so like the thing with the Warriors is it is really all revolving around KD because Steph... I'll throw out my take. I have not loved Steph's season at all.
Okay.
He's playing off ball more than ever, and a lot of that's just trying to accommodate everyone. But I feel like he's taken the, well, if I'm going to play like a shooting guard, I'm getting up shots like a shooting guard. Because he's part of what made Steph great and was also frustrating in bad games was like you'd want him to take over, but he'd be too committed to doing the right thing. So you'd get those like big games where he only had 16 or 17 shots because he passed out of double teams.
Yeah.
And ultimately in the aggregate, that is why they were as good as they were, because even when you lose a game like that, more times than not, playing with that approach leads to wins. Mm-hmm. But this year, where he's basically like about 5 assists a game, which is the lowest since his rookie year, and you know, a lot of games where it's like 3 assists because he's basically off ball playing shooting guard the whole time. He's getting up whatever look he wants, and he'll never be shy about looks he thinks are good looks.
Yeah.
So it's just a lot of like 25 plus shot games, which is, it's weird. I think he's on pace for his most shots per game ever. And you wouldn't think this is the most talent he's ever played with. When you throw in Boogie, like, I don't even know how you can get that many shots up.
Right. The shot selection is almost like year one Kyrie with LeBron before he attempted to get guys more involved in the game. And listen,
second most shots per game, by the way. I was wrong on that. The 16 MVP season was the most, which it should have been. But
he was pretty good that year, in my opinion. Like the DeMarcus Cousins addition, I think it's still a smart move. You add talent whenever you can add it, right? But the problem is, over the course of an 82 game season, when this team knows damn well that nothing they do in the regular season matters, like they can go into they could go into this playoffs as the eighth seed, and they're still in the overwhelming favorite, in my opinion. I think that's when having so many mouths to feed and trying to decide on, okay, what are we going to prioritize? Who are we going to try to get going? I think those decisions become a little more difficult. And for Steph, I think your observations are right. He's playing off ball. He's just going to jack up shots because he realizes, okay, I'm not the straw that stirs the drink tonight. I'm playing off ball. We're trying to get KD going. We're trying to keep him happy. We're trying to get DeMarcus back in shape and involved. And it's awkward. I could see why this season wouldn't be a lot of fun. But I just think the talent overall, it's going to erase any problems that they have in the regular season.
Yeah, the like last night's a perfect example. I don't even know how it's possible for KD to play 36 minutes and take 6 shots. But that's like, and it was
Kevin Wiggins,
and it was good because he had 11 assists. Like it was a weird game in that regard. But then you look at it afterwards, you're like, this is.
I thought it was a typo.
Yeah,
I thought it was a typo.
I didn't even realize he only got 6. Like I was watching the game, and I'm like, okay, they're point KD, and this is working because he's a really good passer. And then like sometime in the fourth quarter, I'm like, he's like, I only really remember him making 2 shots. And then I looked at the box score. I was like, oh wow. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know what the funny thing is? They have actually played better the last 2 months when one of the four, I guess, offensive-minded starters, so not counting Draymond, sits. So, mm-hmm. like, when KD was out, it flowed perfectly. Yep. When Boogie's been out, it flows perfectly. It's like, but, like, when it's all four of them, it's finally that there's only one ball thing that, it was kind of silly that people said when they got KD. But, like, Boogie's another player who wants the ball in his hands. He's not a Klay Thompson type. Yeah. So it's finally reaches that point where it's like, I don't want to say diminishing returns, but like kind of.
No, it is. It 100% is. And it's a testament to how well the four fit together in Steph, Klay, Draymond, and KD. Because I don't think there's a lot of personalities that could make that work. And once you get to a fifth guy that needs the ball and expects the ball, there's just not enough possessions in a game. There really isn't. And I think guys get in zones where they're comfortable in. And when you have, Draymond's so unselfish. And when he's getting the ball, he's looking to create for other guys. But throughout the course of a game, guys get into a rhythm and they say, okay, tonight's a Klay night, tonight's a Steph night, tonight's a KD night. And on those nights when it was just the four of them, you could still get enough shots for the other guys. But once you're trying to get DeMarcus involved too, it almost reminds me a little bit of Denver when they kind of got everybody and everybody's like a secondary playmaker on that team. And it's just this awkward phase where there's no established hierarchy on the floor. And as you said, I think it just ends up being diminishing returns at that point.
Yeah, it's like, it's pretty much just diminishing returns. By the way, that kind of speaks to Klay's unique value because he doesn't need the ball. Like I don't know that he's a max player the traditional sense of what you'd think he is because of the way that finances work.
Right.
But like he's a guy who plays well with any other superstar because he can give you 20 without having to dribble the ball once.
Yeah.
And no, I think he's
a dream.
Yeah.
In that way.
So it's just, it wouldn't work if you substituted him for like Kawhi's a superior player, right? It wouldn't work. They'd be worse if Kawhi was in his role, which sounds silly to say, but it's just like they would be. It'd just be another guy who wants the ball, who wants to post up, and it'd be kind of more of a mess.
Right. No, absolutely. And I mean, it's almost, this is a bad example because there's just not as much chemistry in these situations, but it's just like when we see an international play when a team keeps up with Team USA.
Right.
If you have guys that fit together that know their roles, you can put together you can be better than the sum of your parts. And I think when you have guys that don't necessarily fit as well together, or them having the ball takes away from someone else's rhythm, it just isn't as good.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm going to get to some of these questions now.
Okay.
This one, I should have done this one earlier when we were kind of taking a little victory lap on the Lakers. At what point did you think the Lakers season was going off the rails?
Okay, so there's a few parts to that. I think at the start of the year, I knew it wasn't going to go well. I knew that by December, LeBron would be demanding trades. But when I knew it was officially doomed was after the deadline passed, and they didn't really add a whole lot that fits or helps out at all. I mean, I like the Bullock addition, but that's just one more wing player that doesn't address any of their needs, really. So at that point, I knew that they were in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm trying to think, who did they lose to the game after? So they played Houston the first game after the All-Star break.
I think Phoenix was the next.
Yeah, Phoenix, that's the one. Yeah, that's when I was like, oh, they might be in trouble here, because I didn't believe they wouldn't make the playoffs. Like, going off the rails is it's depends on your perception. Like, their season went off the rails when LeBron got hurt, but like that Phoenix loss is when I was like, oh, they might not make the playoffs. I didn't entertain that possibility prior.
Yeah, I went on a podcast earlier that day with Anthony Irwin and Harrison Fagan, and I was like, yeah, I think they're gonna still make playoffs. I'm like, I just have a harder time picturing it. And then by that evening I was like, oh shit, they're not making playoffs. Like, they're doomed. So I think the Phoenix loss was when it really sunk in that the math just wasn't in their favor.
All right, okay. From GSW James, sorry to bore you with KD again. Is there any chance we would do a sign and trade with him? That way he gets his money and we could get a couple draft picks to help the run going. Obviously, the Warriors would do that if he wanted to leave. Like, that's better than him leaving for free. I just don't really see why.
Like, yeah, and it's not easy to do sign and trades, right, anymore. And a new CBA, I just don't see how it's possible. But so you're saying no to Brandon Knight and Jordan Clarkson and the Houston first?
Yeah, that's a no. I guess the dream scenario, if you've resigned yourself to the idea that KD's leaving, is Kyrie stays in Boston, which also seems unlikely. Mm-hmm. And he's dead set on playing with Kyrie, so they have to force some sort of, like, you take Gordon Hayward and we'll give you Jaylen Brown. But that's not happening. That's like the best case scenario the Warriors could come up with in that sort of thing.
I mean, the good news is, even without KD, you guys are probably still the favorites next year. I just don't see a sign and trade being possible.
Yeah, it's not happening. Let's see what else we got here. A couple variations of this question. Someone asks, is low usage KD the best thing for this team? Did KD finally find his spot in Kerr's offense as the point?
My God.
Yeah, this is like such first world problems. I know you're listening to this, you're like, this is the kind of stuff you have to debate.
Yeah, is one of the greatest, if not the greatest, pure scorer we've ever seen better in a low usage passing role like Draymond? I'm going to go with no. I think the solution might just be less Cousins, and you're just kind of staggering them a little bit more in the playoffs, and you're having Clay and KD finish plays and Steph just being this nightmare force that just has some of the most gravity that we've ever seen.
Yeah, I kind of feel like the best role for KD in this offense is the one that has him in a good mood. Because ultimately that's what dictates it. Like, he can take over a game in a variety of ways, and what you want is him playing free as opposed to, like, I don't know, being in a mood for a variety of reasons. So
yeah, Which style of play is going to get him involved on defense? Because if he's in a good mood, he's going to make a big difference on defense. And when you already have, when healthy, one of the most versatile defensive players ever in Draymond, if you can get KD rolling offensively and contributing on defense, you're not going to lose.
You know the funny thing? The Oracle crowd responds more to KD making defensive plays than anything he does on offense. And I think it's probably just, I mean, his weak side blocks or stuff like that are wow plays, whereas like hitting seven straight 17-footers is just kind of like, I mean, it's very impressive, but it's not, it's just not like the same.
You guys have seen a lot of offense in the last few years. I get it.
Well, it's just not the same as like a monster dunk or any variation of like a Steph 3.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Let's see, a couple free agency questions. Well, we can springboard this. Okay. This is, if we assume KD leaves, they're saying what veteran player should the Warriors target with the mid-level, but it's kind of a broader, I want to take this broader with you. The 14 to 16 Warriors, obviously Steph, Clay, and Draymond were the core, but it was the fact that they had so many good players that fit perfectly around it, which made them, you know, like kind of all-time good.
Right.
And they were able to do that because Steph, Clay, and Draymond were really cheap. You usually don't get core pieces producing on their rookie deals or like 1 year off of their rookie deals before the extensions got big. Mm-hmm. So it gave them the money to get an Iguodala, a Bogut, you know, Livingston, stuff like this. Now they kind of have to, because they're going to have to pay all these guys, they're going to have to go bargain shopping, I guess you would say.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm familiar with the practice for sure.
what should they actually be looking for in this post KD reality?
I think what you'd want is kind of versatile forwards. I think what you'd need to kind of get is some Draymond insurance. I mean, if he's not going to be right, that's a problem no matter what. But if you could at least lessen the load a little bit in the regular season, I think you would want to get those type of guys. Someone that's a placeholder. I mean, Jeff Green kind of filled that role for LeBron on the Cavs last year where, okay, he's not doing a great job throughout the course of a regular season, but he's at least being a body to take kind of some of that defensive responsibility. I think preserving Draymond has to be the priority because I think Steph and Clay will just continue to do what they're going to do. And if you can get a versatile forward that can kind of play that 3-4 spot and play a little less Draymond at the 5 in the regular season and lighten the load on him, I think that has to be your priority.
Yeah, I mean, the conversation no Warrior fan wants to have is if KD leaves, do they have to trade Draymond and kind of look for, kind of do the step backwards to take two steps forward?
Yep. I mean, that's no one's a discussion gonna give you're going to have, but
no one's giving you sympathy for that. But
no, and honestly, it's another one of those situations, like almost like what we were talking about with the Lakers young guys, where if that's the route you're going to go, keeping Draymond healthy, at least in the short term, and kind of showcasing him a little bit in that way, I think that's what you would need to do. I don't think you trade him this summer, no matter what, is kind of my main point.
Well, I just don't think they could get anything. Like, if someone gave you the Godfather offer for Draymond, obviously you have to think about it, but or do it, depending on what your definition of Godfather is. But it's not coming, not for Draymond Green, 1 year away from an extension.
Right.
Which he's made clear, you know, he wants to be paid what he feels he's owed, which he should.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you're not getting like two starters and a high draft pick for him or something, you know, like that's not happening.
Right. I agree.
Last question. I like this one. Giannis is a lock for all NBA second forward spot, KD or Paul George? Because we're both assuming, I mean, LeBron and Kawhi have both missed too much time, so they're out of the conversation.
Agreed. So that's a tough one I mean, I would have given it to Paul George prior to him getting banged up here. He hasn't been playing as good.
Prior to them falling to the 8 seed?
Yeah, well, I mean, every single game, every day that passes, you can jump from like 8 to 4 in the West right now. But yeah, it does make it a little bit more difficult. They also allowed Bruno Caboclo to score 24 points and have 11 rebounds tonight. So my opinion might be a little colored by that. I think I still give it to Paul George just because of his consistency on both ends. I mean, he's been the best player for the Thunder this year, and was probably in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation earlier as well. So I'd give it to him.
It's amazing to me because I think KD's still been better than him all year, but it just kind of speaks to KD's the only guy who comes close to getting the LeBron expectations, where yep. like the baseline of what we consider a good year for them is not the same as what we consider for their quote-unquote contemporaries.
Oh, no, absolutely, and it's something he suffers from, and he also, not only that, he's suffers from just... Yeah, just the talent that's on the team, that hurts his case in these situations. Right. Whether or not that's fair, that's a different discussion, but this is all contributing factors to why he might be leaving this summer.
Yeah. So we both know how it's going to play out when he goes to New York, if he goes to New York. If,
of course.
For the people who are going to yell at me for saying I'm running him out of town. it's going to be a honeymoon for – how long is a honeymoon lasting? Because I think it's going to last, like, majority of the first year.
I think it's going to last a while. I mean, Carmelo kind of gave us the blueprint, right? I mean, a lot of Knicks fans still don't even hate him. If you can get the Knicks to relevance, I mean, realistically speaking, the East could look completely different next year. If Kyrie leaves Boston,
let me say this. It's not going to be what they do on the court that leads to, like, fans being annoyed. It's going to be the other stuff.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if they put together like Kyrie, KD, and find a way to get Jimmy Butler, that's going to be the most miserable group of three guys a locker room could possibly have. I do think the honeymoon will last the bulk of next season, and how bad it gets off the court is probably going to be dictated by the record on the court, at least early on. But by the second, third year, I think you start to get more of the drama.
I just can't see a way in which Kyrie and KD don't hate playing together, like, long-term. They're just way too similar.
Yeah. No, I get it. I think...
It's just going to be so up and down. It's going to be like the... when they're good, it's going to be like the most romantic thing of all time. Mm-hmm. But when it's bad, it's gonna be just it's gonna be like that tension that like comes through your TV,
right? And they're not going to be as good of a fit as Kyrie and LeBron. I think
or Steph and KD,
right? And I think Kyrie's rounded out his game a little bit more since he's gone to Boston and kind of changed his role. But I still think there's a lot of overlap there, and they're weird personalities. And who knows? Maybe after a season or two in New York, Kyrie just retires because that is something he's hinted at a few times and
goes and plays drums in the jungle.
Yeah, you just never. Well, no, he wants to go full Jonestown and start his own community. So that's where that's going to go.
Oh God, yeah. I was always thinking of. I don't know how much you watch international soccer, but Ronaldinho was like the best player in the world at like 25. Mm-hmm. And basically around 28, he stopped caring and was just more interested in partying. And by the age of 30, he would regularly be gone and like be seen at like these beach parties, just playing bongo drums to like 6 a.m. before game days, that type of thing. And it's just like disinterested in the whole process. Like, I've proven what I needed to prove. I'm just going to enjoy my life.
He's no Clay.
Yeah, no. All right, man. Well, I appreciate you coming on this week. We can get you on in the playoffs sometime with Andy, who will keep you in line a little more.
Andy might bring out the reckless in me, so we'll see how that's going. Maybe it'll catch me on a day where I'm a little less sober. But I appreciate you having me on. A lot of fun. I'm really interested to see where this goes for Golden State and what impact KD leaving, if he does leave, has on the league.